Gearing up for cycling season. For thousands of Mainers, the advent of summer means it's time to tune up the bicycle and hit the road, or maybe the trail. This summer, there are more options than ever for Maine cyclists. Bike paths, improved roads, and new events designed to get more people using pedal power. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn from the experts about many of these, and we'll discuss safe cycling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and with me in the studio, Nancy Grant, Executive Director of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, and Brian Dans, who serves on the board of the Greater Portland Chapter of the New England Mountain Bike Association. We'd like to hear from you. Are you an avid cyclist or someone afraid of getting out on your bike? Share your comments. Email talk@mpbn.net. Send a tweet to @MaineCalling. Post to our Facebook page or give us a call. 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Taking cycling seriously. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN radio listener contributions and by First Wind, committed to putting the wind to work for Maine with wind farms in Lincoln, Mars Hill, Danforth, and Eastbrook. Learn more at firstwind.com.
Nancy, Brian, thanks so much for being here today on Maine Calling. Nancy, I want to start with you. I was looking at the Maine Cyclist, your newsletter, at the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, and I was struck by a sentence or part of a sentence that said, "We are trying to create better conditions for everyone to start riding bikes more." What do you need to do in Maine to create better conditions to have more people out there?
Well, there's quite a long list of things that we need to do. I think the number one thing is to improve our bicycling infrastructure so that more Mainers will feel safe when they're out on the road. And we have a whole variety of infrastructure. We have on-the-road infrastructure that in a lot of cases was designed primarily to move fast cars and to park them. But slowly but surely, we're trying to move that so that it becomes something that is safe for bicyclists and pedestrians. And then we have a lot of infrastructure that is more off-road. So you imagine the Eastern Prom Trail or the Back Cove Trail that really protects bicyclists completely from motorists so that they can feel safe and start to get familiar with riding a bike again. A second really important part of the equation is to make sure, A, that our motorists understand that bicyclists absolutely belong on the road and that our law enforcement enforces that concept.
Have we come very far in both of those, in improving roads and improving sort of the cultural understanding of riding?
I think we've moved a long way culturally, and in different parts of the state, you know, it's certainly more and less challenging. Unfortunately, with enforcement, the police are sort of asked to do more and more with less and less money, and many of them aren't cyclists, and we are not always happy with their treatment of cyclists.
Interesting. Brian Dans, I want to bring you into the conversation. You're with the New England Mountain Bike Association. How does Maine rate as a place to go mountain biking?
Well, in my personal opinion, it's one of the best places, of course. I would say that it's definitely up and coming in that realm, because the amount of trail system that's being created and the number of users is definitely increasing exponentially every year, and the amount of awareness of the different places to ride, the amount of trail advocacy we've been doing. I would say in New England in general, it's been coming up, and Maine as a subset of it, it's getting quite increased, yeah.
How difficult is it to get access to the kind of trails you'd like to ride on? I'm kind of thinking of the snowmobile mm-hmm. community and some of the negotiating they do with private mm-hmm. landowners and parks. And is the mountain biking community doing the same sort of thing?
We are. Actually, the fact that you bring up the snowmobiling makes a lot of sense, because it's a very well-practiced model. It's a very established model, and it's something that You know, we definitely are trying to emulate to some degree. We do a lot of work with towns and on the state level. An example is the Bradbury to Pineland corridor, which has been, you know, from Bradbury Mountain State Park out to the Pineland area there. And that has been a project that's been 20 years in the making. And just in the past 3 years, because of a lot of the work that the New England Mountain Bike Association and local riders in general have been doing and the amount of interest, has really made major strides in just the past couple of years.
Okay, Brian, you got to mention a great mountain biking trail. Nancy, where are some of your favorite places to ride? And before I ask you that question, I want to say that we have a tweet from somebody who says the Backroads of the Lakes region is his or her favorite place to ride. What about you?
There are so many beautiful places
to
ride
in
Maine.
That's the politically correct answer.
No, but it's totally honest. And I like the person who tweeted said, I love the back roads where there's very little traffic and you really get out into the sort of pastoral or forested parts of the state. Having said that, I always love the ocean and we have beautiful places all up and down the coast to ride. I also am a hill lover, so I do like going in the mountains. I really could not pick a favorite ride. On the other hand, we have a magnificent ride on Sunday for women throughout the state and, you know, in the area called the Maine Women's Ride. And even though it starts from Freeport, which we think of as sort of a suburban town, it goes up through Brunswick, it goes out to Pownal, it goes into New Gloucester, and it is absolutely gorgeous. And our riders get to choose from 10, 25, 50, or 75 miles. Any one of those four routes is magnificent, and you get a little taste of everything. So you don't have to go very far in Maine to find a really beautiful place to ride.
Have we seen an explosion in interest in riding in the same kind of way that we've seen in, you know, running, how the races fill up right away, and triathlons? Is the same kind of thing going on with events around cycling?
There are so many bicycling events all over the state every year, and they do seem to increase all the time. And some of them are, you know, fundraisers for a cause like cancer or diabetes. Some of them are really just trying to get cyclists out on the road, you know, trying a different part of the state. I really hope that bicycling will have the numbers that runners have today. And, you know, I was a runner 30 years ago when it was really exploding, and I do feel like bicycling is experiencing the same kind of thing.
Brian?
From the mountain bike specific perspective as well, most of the events that I've seen have been filling up very quickly. There's large races, again, at Bradbury Mountain State Park. There's a 12-hour race there that's run every September. I know, you're giving me the, 12 hours kind of
is
look
Is that a
there.
Relay?
That is, it can be if you want to, but there are many people who do it solo, and my hats are off to them. But that's been a very popular one that sells out every year. Up in Carabasset Valley, the Sugarloaf area has a epic race, a 60-kilometer race that they do, and those tend to sell out very quickly. There's not many mountain bike events that don't sell out, and to go in line with the running, you see a lot of the same types of trail users, trail runners and mountain bikers tend to like the same types of trails, and they'll have events at similar areas, and both of those tend to sell out very quickly.
Well, if you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number is 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. You can email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'm going to go to an email right now. It came from somebody who wishes to remain anonymous. That person writes, when it comes to bikes, especially around Portland, why do cars need to make sure we are aware of bikes, give 3 feet, etc., when bikes never seem to actually obey the rules of the road? They don't stop at all stop signs. They don't signal when they're turning. Why the double standard? And this person adds, I had a biker blow past me recently when I was stopped in a neighborhood stop sign. He didn't look or stop himself, just kept going. Nancy, I'm going to let you take that one.
So I agree with the motorist that bicyclists should be following the rules of the road. And one of the things that the coalition does is promote bike safety, and we create all kinds of resources to teach people bicycle safety. One of the challenges with bicyclists is we don't have driver's ed. And every day there are more people getting out on the road, trying bicycling for the first time since they were 15 or 16 and they got their licenses. And so some of them are just doing what they think is right and they're not, you know, following those rules. And I get just as frustrated as anybody if I'm either on a bike or in my car at an intersection and somebody just blows right through. I will tell you, there's some really simple rules that I think if we could get this message out to every cyclist, some of this problem would go away. And one is that we are considered a vehicle and we are supposed to follow the same rules as the drivers. So we're supposed to drive on the right-hand side. We're supposed to signal when we turn. We're supposed to stop at stoplights and intersections. And I truly believe there's a lot of people who break those rules because they really don't know. And so we have more work to do in terms of teaching safety.
Are there rules of the trail as well, Brian?
Absolutely there are. They tend to emulate a lot of the same rules as the rules of the road. But some of the more specific ones are that the trail user, a cyclist, needs to give the right-of-way to just about every other trail user. Hikers have right-of-way over cyclists, horses especially, because it's really no fun to spook a horse and the rider on it when you're out on your bike. And in general, you know, you want to – this tends to be one of those rules that gets broken more because you're supposed to give right-of-way to the uphill rider. It is harder to restart your bicycle on a hill going up than going down. But generally speaking, the downhill rider ends up taking the line first because, well – they're going downhill.
Okay. We'll go to a call now. This is John in Gray. John, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with your comments. I'm an avid cyclist, and I obey all the rules as much as I can. One of the things that I was really hoping to get out to your listeners, I ride probably 5 times a week, and at least one of those times I am chased by a dog. It might be a different dog. It might be a dog I've never seen before. And I must say that 99% of the dogs that are chasing me are not chasing me because they want to bite me or actually cause me harm. It's just a wonderful game. But unfortunately, if all of the listeners could understand, a dog loose chasing a cyclist is an exceptionally dangerous circumstance for both the dog and the cyclist. I'll take my comments off the air. I just want to make sure your listeners heard that, and I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, John.
I couldn't agree more with you there, John. As a trail user, you know, and a commuter, I've experienced that both on the road and on the trail. And I actually ride with my dog quite extensively on trail systems that allow it. And the key is to have good control over your dog. And on a lot of those back roads that we love riding on so much, there are loose dogs in the yard that don't have an invisible fence or something like that, and it could definitely be a challenge. Thanks for bringing that up.
All right, and now to Nick in Portland. Nick, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, good morning. Hey, Brian. This is Nick Rowe.
Hey, Nick.
Hey. So much for my anonymity. I did want to just make a statement that I am a recreational rider. I have almost been hit on a number of times, so seeing infrastructure being built in and around Portland is great, and understanding that there's an effort to get education out there for bicyclists and motorists is great. But on the other side, I want to kind of share the email from earlier that, you know, where is the accountability to the bicyclist? It was mentioned earlier in the show that, you know, we're trying to get law enforcement to crack down on motorists to help them avoid bicyclists, but to, you know, reiterate, you know, when a bicyclist runs a red light and halts traffic to a grinding halt or is riding the wrong way down a road and comes barreling around a blind corner in the wrong direction, you know, is law enforcement ever going to be holding the cyclist accountable? I'll also take my comments off the air. Thanks.
Nancy, has the Bicycle Coalition of Maine been reaching out to law enforcement agencies and trying to work with them?
We actually do in a couple of ways. We have an online form that asks our members and community to report various incidents where either they've had some kind of difficult situation with a motorist or a law enforcement official. And we use those reports, the reports of those incidents, to start conversations with law enforcement. And obviously you can't, you know, call the police chief and say, hey, your guys screwed up in this context and that was really bad and really unfair. What's wrong with your guys? You can't take that approach. You've got to start a conversation. And for the most part, they have been receptive. The flip side that I would like to mention, though, in terms of that first email, is that motorists are not without issues also. And if you're riding around the city the way I do, every other car has got a driver who's got the cell phone in one hand and the cigarette in the other hand, and they're not stopping at stoplights, and they're not stopping at stop signs, and they're not putting on their blinkers, and they're otherwise incredibly distracted, which makes our situation even more challenging. But it sometimes can feel like everybody wants the bicyclists to be 100% complying with the law when they don't have that standard for the motorists. I would like everybody to pay closer attention to the law, and I try incredibly hard. And I even will mention things when I see cyclists who haven't done the right thing, and that's a hard context also. But, you know, we are doing our best, and there seems to be sort of the attitude of, like, there's one bad bicyclist, so they're all bad, and I don't think motorists would like it if they felt the same thing on the other side.
Nancy, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
This is Tom Ashbrook, host of NPR's On Point. We are shaking up the national conversation every day with movers and shakers in business, the arts, politics, science, sports, and more. It's bold perspective you won't hear anywhere else. Join us for the next On Point.
Join us for On Point this evening at 11 o'clock. MPBN is hiring. We're seeking an energetic individual with an appreciation for public radio and television in Maine to join our underwriting sales team. The successful candidate will have a minimum of 3 years' experience in advertising, sales, marketing, or fundraising, and have a proven knowledge of the business landscape in Maine and New England. Based in Portland, the selected candidate will work with businesses, nonprofits, and foundations to secure underwriting support for MPBN radio and television, as well as advertising on MPBN.net and in Experience magazine. To learn more about the underwriting sales position and details on how to apply, visit MPBN.net, click on About, and choose Careers at MPBN. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by the Maine Community Foundation, working with donors and other partners to strengthen Maine's economy and communities, on the web at mainecf.org.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Biking in Maine. With me in the studio, Nancy Grant, who is Executive Director of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, and Brian Dance. He's a board member of the Greater Portland Chapter of the New England Mountain Bike Association. On the line with us now is Joe Minutolo, co-owner of the Bar Harbor Bike Shop. Joe, welcome to Maine Calling. I understand that you have had a bike shop in Bar Harbor for 35 years. How has cycling changed in that time?
Oh, it's advanced in so many different areas. You know, we're seeing more and more different types of bicycles being introduced into the marketplace to, you know, be able to ride on any type of surfaces or any type of application.
I'm sorry, we've lost him. We will get back to a conversation with Joe in just a minute. First, we're going to go to Liz in Portland. Liz, go ahead.
Hi, Jen. I just returned from Copenhagen with the University of Southern Maine's MBA program, and I just wanted to share what an incredible experience it was to witness the tremendous support for cycling in Copenhagen and to be able to ride a bike with thousands of other people in that city. And we really, with my classmates, we really were looking at what factors play a role in being able to push public and government support for the infrastructure that they have there. And it is pretty multi-pronged. They are committed to reducing CO2 emissions, but they also recognize that by encouraging people to bike, they do reduce healthcare costs in their country.
Nancy, I know that you're a big advocate of improving the infrastructure. How difficult is it to get this kind of agenda through in our country versus someplace like Denmark, where even though the statistics may be there, that health, you know, is improved and that, you know, all the other benefits, carbon emissions might be improved, we're also dealing with perpetual budget shortfalls, and adding bike lanes or changing roadways is expensive.
So one of the reasons that Copenhagen has been so successful, in addition to cultural support for bicycling, is that they simply cannot fit more cars into that fixed area. So they have so much motivation to increase the percentage of people bicycling versus getting more cars. And we're finding the same thing in Manhattan. The reason, I mean, Bloomberg has a lot of ideas on, you know, reducing the carbon footprint, and he's very progressive on healthcare policy, et cetera. But they simply cannot fit more cars on that island. So the more cars that get replaced by bicycles, the more the more they can sort of meet a bunch of different goals.
And what you're referring to is the New York City bike share called City Bike that just launched this week.
Exactly. Well, and so that literally just launched on Monday. And for those people who don't know about this, this is another bike share system where you basically can rent a bike for 15 minutes for a half an hour and then just put it wherever you need to leave it and then pick up another one in another part of the city. So the bike share is just the latest in what New York City has been doing, because they've been making huge changes, you know, for the last 5 years in terms of infrastructure. So I do think that urban areas where there's more challenges in terms of air quality, parking spaces, traffic are always going to be ahead of rural areas. On the other hand, it seems like culturally we are taking off in the U.S. and starting to think about bicycles as a viable transportation mode in a way that we definitely weren't 10 years ago, 30 years ago, especially 50 years ago.
All right. Thanks, Liz, for calling. We're going to return now to Joe Minutolo. Joe, so sorry we lost you earlier.
Oh, no problem.
Anyway, I wanted to return to, so I'm guessing that a lot of people are listening to this show and thinking, I'm going to go get my bike out of the garage. And maybe it's been sitting there for a couple of years, maybe more than a couple of years. What is your advice right now if someone is thinking of getting back on the bike, other than putting some air in the tires?
If they're getting back on the bike, I think it's a good idea. Maybe bring it to a shop and let them do some type of a safety check on it. You know, sometimes over time things happen, and if you're trying to have a good experience on your bike, it's definitely not a bad idea to get a little more trained eye to make sure the wheels are straight and the bike's lubed up and the bars are tight and, you know, things are good to go. So, you know, it wouldn't hurt to visit your local shop and have that little checkup.
And how about if you don't own a bicycle but are thinking about buying one? One, how much can you expect to spend to have a decent bike? And two, how do you think about, you were talking earlier about all the options, how do you even start to choose whether you want a road bike or a mountain bike or a hybrid or something else? There's so many different kinds.
You know, bicycles kind of relate to your personality, too. You know, it could be terrain. What kind of terrain am I going to be riding this bike on would determine which bicycle is right for you. It could be, what type of athlete are you, or are you a commuter, or are you, just looking for some social fun, something just I want to get out and feel some freedom. So there's many products out there. There's definitely in the bicycle industry, there's going to be a product for you, whatever type of rider you are. But the big thing is to get out, look at some stuff, talk to some of these, talk to some of these shop owners and shop people, because they know they can direct you to the appropriate choice. And that's really important, because you need to get on a bike that's comfortable.
Okay, so Jennifer, can I mention that Americans own more bicycles per capita than anywhere in the world, and we ride them the least. And I think one of the big reasons for that is that a lot of people end up with a bike that is really uncomfortable for them. And here's a plug for independent bike shops. When you go to an independent bike shop as opposed to Walmart, which is where you might get your cheaper bike, you're not going to have a salesperson who's knowledgeable and can help you get the bike that's really going to fit both your body and your needs. And when you go to these independent bike shops, they can really fit you up.
Joe, do you think that there's a little bit of a fear out there, though? Sort of like people are afraid of walking into an art gallery. They're afraid of walking into an independent bike shop because they know it's going to be so much more expensive than their budget.
Yeah, you know, it's not that expensive, though. I think there's a perception of that, and I think people get intimidated. You know, a bicycle really in the long run is a very cheap investment. You know, you watch people go out and spend thousands on skis every year, you know, because they have to have the latest and greatest. Realistically, a bicycle, even if it's, you know, a $300 or $400 or $500 bicycle, you're going to get 10 years of service out of that bike without doing a whole lot of, you know, extra things to keep it on the road. So, you know, it's not like it's a one-time cost, but you spread it over a longer period of time. You know, people spend more on their cable bills monthly than they do on their bicycle and cycling needs. So, you know, I don't think that's much of an argument. Yeah, you can. I hear it all the time. People come in, God, that bike's more expensive than my first car. And it's like, yeah, it could be true, but cars used to be cheap back then too. You know, buy a car today. So I think that if you're going to use it, it's totally worth it. And I think cycling is such a wonderful thing to do. It's something that provides us with so many benefits. It's environmental, it's health, it's fitness. It's a social thing. It's an economic thing. You know, it's freedom. And I think that, you know, joining the crowd, being part of cycling, I mean, is something you can do your whole life. And boy, the benefits far outweigh the cost. So.
Joe, Brian is dying to jump in. Go ahead, Brian.
Just to comment on the price issue and this philosophy around the fact that you hear a lot of people think of bicycles as toys. So, oh, why am I spending so much money on some toy or something that kids use? Whereas as the culture changes and people are thinking more about bicycles as a tool for commuting, for getting around, or, you know, as a exercise device, like people will spend hundreds of dollars a month on or a year on going to a gym or something like that, where you could take that same money and invest it. You're still investing it into your body. You're just using a different tool.
The other piece to this is that it's been estimated that it costs $9,000 a year to run your car, and that includes insurance, and it includes maintenance, and it includes payments and gas, et cetera. And there's an increasing number of people, at least in the greater Portland area, who are ditching a car. And for $9,000, you can buy an incredibly good bike and
probably
a whole lot of other
of
stuff.
Yeah. Or three. And Joe, before I let you go, I want to bring you and Brian in on something I just learned about this morning. I want to ask Brian if he's a fat biker, and I want to ask you if you sell fat bikes.
I actually had an opportunity this winter to use a fat bike quite extensively, and it was a really, really fun experience, even just going out on the snowmobile trails or getting out there and
riding. And you have to explain what it is.
Oh, I'm sorry. So so a fat bike is something – no, not everyone saw that Bill Green episode. It's a mountain bike with – 4-inch tires on average. So you've got a very, very large volume tire, almost looks like an ATV wheel on your bicycle. And, you know, the gearing gets changed a little to make it so you can pedal that. But it truly becomes an all conditions bicycle. You can really ride it in all types of different places.
And Joe, is this something that's catching on up in Bar Harbor?
You know, there is. There's a little bit of a fat bike fever going on, there's no doubt. They're a lot of fun. I mean, I had a customer come in. I have him on the floor, and I had a customer come in, and he looked at this bike with these huge tires, and he's like, what is that for? And he's just laughing, you know. And I said, take it down the street. And he took it down the street, and he came back, and he goes, man, he goes, two people asked me what this thing was all about, and they're all just kind of laughing. I could hear them laughing the whole way, and I said, that's what that bike is for.
Yeah.
It puts a smile on your face. They ride really nicely. They're a lot of fun.
I have a few mountain bike dedicated mountain bike friends who have gone ahead and stopped riding their very fancy dual suspension bikes and are just on a fat bike year round now.
They're great.
Yeah. Well, Joe Minutolo, thank you so much for joining us on Maine Calling. He is co-owner of the Bar Harbor Bike Shop. And now we're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay tuned.
On the next Fresh Air, how opioid painkillers came to be used in the treatment of chronic pain, like back problems, and what the consequences have been. We talk with New York Times reporter Barry Meyer, author of the new e-book, A World of Hurt, Fixing Pain Medicine's Biggest Mistake. And John Powers tells us about his favorite films at the Cannes Film Festival. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. MPBN's main Capital Connection television channel offers daily coverage of the legislature in Augusta. Our coverage starts at 10 each weekday morning and includes coverage of House and Senate sessions, select committee hearings, and occasional interviews and press conferences. We also provide a rebroadcast of the day's coverage in the evening, usually at 7 o'clock. The main Capital Connection channel is available over the air and on most cable companies' digital tier. For more information, visit mpbn.net or call Audience Services at 800-884-1717. Again, 800-884-1717. Join us at 1 o'clock following Maine Calling for Alternative Radio. Today's speaker is Thomas Lindsay, attorney and co-founder and executive director of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. That's Alternative Radio, coming up after Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today, we're talking about getting on your bicycle and going for a ride. With me in the studio, Nancy Grant, Executive Director of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, and Brian Dance, a board member of the Greater Portland Chapter of the New England Mountain Bike Association. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbnnet.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. I'm going to get to a couple calls in a second, but I want to bring up the sort of serious side of biking or cycling. I know, and I'm sure you both know, people who have been seriously injured on bicycles, and not necessarily because of traffic accidents. Maybe they've hit a crack in a road or a bad pothole or something like that. What kind of advice do you give people when they get on their bicycle other than be careful? How do you sort of balance the – I quickly looked up the statistics. According to the National Highway Transportation Safety Association, 52,000 people injured in bicycle crashes a year. That's a serious con to getting on your bicycle.
I would say put on your helmet and look around as like not just to say be safe, but, you know, be aware of what's going on. Some people, because cyclists use the same roads as cars, sometimes we almost operate as though we have this steel cage around us and that we have the same kinds of safety systems involved, and we very much do not. So a lot of the issue comes with the occasional recreational cyclist just not being as experienced on the roads, and whether it be an incident with a vehicle or just with the actual surface itself, it's really a matter of, you know, we don't want to be overly cautious. We want to encourage people to use their bikes and to get out there, because the more of us that are out there, the more safety and the more awareness there will be. But you want to be aware of your surroundings and use what safety equipment is there to you.
Nancy, are there certain times of the year that are more dangerous than others? I'm guessing spring with pothole season, but we're thinking about gravel on the side of the road, patches of sand. Are there in Maine, are there times of the year where you really need to be ultra aware?
Well, I think the winter's probably the most dangerous because cars are having a hard enough time keeping themselves not sliding and slipping and even being able to see out their windshield. So that, to me, is by far the most dangerous time of the year. And the spring is tough because of all the stuff in the road. And, you know, I'm always so happy when I see all the street cleaners out there. But, you know, for the most part, you can navigate around that. I would just say on the safety side is, yeah, you are riding a two-wheeled vehicle rather than a four-wheeled. So balance is always a part, and you don't have 5,000 pounds of steel around you. So you do need to be careful. On the other hand, the numbers of people that die in motor vehicle accidents is way higher than that. So, you know, we can't be too afraid or we're not going to do anything.
Yeah, a culture of fear around cycling is not going to be any more productive.
I have a email. It says, I want to try mountain biking, but I'm afraid of getting lost in the woods. Suggestions?
Yeah, I have a lot of suggestions. If you're in the greater Portland area, there are a lot of excellent trail systems that are well mapped. You can go to, I'll give a little plug, go to www.gpnemba.com. That's Greater Portland NEMBA's website. We have some trail listings there. Portland Trails, a local nonprofit, has an excellent system of trails right in the city here that are well mapped. You can go to specific areas like Bradbury Mountain State Park. The town of Falmouth has some excellent trail systems that are very well mapped. You can get maps right off of their town websites. It's really a matter of preparing yourself. You know, you don't want to get lost in the woods. Well, you should probably have a map.
All right.
And just the other thing is that there are group bike clubs all over the state that have rides for new mountain bike riders. And so you can go with a group of people who do know the trails and just follow them. And there's no way you'll get lost.
And we're putting all sorts of links on Maine Calling's Facebook page. We'll be sure and add those. I want to go to a call now. Richard from Biddeford. Richard, go ahead.
Okay. Hello. My name is Richard from Biddeford. I have a question regarding why the roadways are marked at often 12 feet wide on these local roads with a speed limit of 25 or 30 or 35 miles an hour, which just encourages the vehicles to travel faster than the speed limit, and it takes up room bicyclists could use.
Yes, you're absolutely right about that, and speed does kill. It is a huge factor in any kind of car or bike crash. Increasingly in Maine and all over the country, you're seeing that travel lane for car right-of-way being reduced down to 11 and even 10 feet. And in addition to providing more right-of-way for the bicyclist, you are having the additional effect of traffic calming. So that is a really cheap solution, and it's really taking off all over the place.
Richard, thank you for your call. On to Mark in Reedfield. Mark, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Thanks, Jennifer. I want to really speak to two things. One is the health benefits of cycling, particularly for the baby boom generation that may not be able to run as much or play basketball. It's a great non-load-bearing exercise, great aerobic exercise. And if we're ever going to solve the health crisis in this country, we've got to keep people active, you know, well into their 80s. So I would encourage people to do that. An important way that people get introduced to cycling is to participate in special events, either the one-day rides or in Maine, we have successful 1, 2, and 3-day rides for the Trek Across Maine or MS-150 or the Dempsey Challenge. And now we have a 7-day ride called Bike Maine that is a project of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine that will each year explore a different part of Maine. Now, this is for experienced cyclists because there's a lot of miles involved, but it should be a great celebration and exploration of this state and a celebration of cycling and the local communities we'll be going through. So I would encourage people who are experienced cyclists to check out this brand new ride at bikemaine.org, which is the Bicycle Coalition's website, and we think it could really grow into a very big signature cycling event for all of New England.
Mark, thanks for calling in. Nancy, you recognize this voice, don't you?
Yes, I do. And I'll put an extra plug in for this ride because at the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, another strategy that we use to try to promote bicycling is to support bicycle tourism. And we feel like this is an absolutely gorgeous state to ride in. There's beautiful country roads, beautiful scenery along the coast, and very friendly people. And bicycle tourists are really easy to deal with. You know, their footprint is very small. They're usually very happy. They tend to eat a lot because they're biking all the time.
And so restaurants like that.
They very often have above average amounts of money to spend when they're not cycling. Back in 2001, the Maine Department of Transportation did a study that said bike tourism was generating $66 million a year. You know, that was 12 years ago. That was always looked at as very conservative. We are hoping to make Maine, you know, one of the most popular bike tourism destinations in the whole country.
Well, Mark, thanks so much for calling in. I want to go quickly to an email from Susanna. She says, some parents teach their children to ride against traffic due to the mistaken belief that it's safer. Some adults ride against traffic for the same reason. Please, could your speakers emphasize not only that it is against the law, but dangerous? And I guess what I want to put out to both of you is she's made that point. Is there a place where someone can go? Is there a website where someone can just kind of refresh themselves on the rules of the road?
Oh, absolutely. The Bicycle Coalition of Maine has so many different safety materials for new and experienced riders. Our website is www.bikemaine.org. I do remember in grade school being told you always have to walk against traffic. And I think a lot of people take that rule and say, well, it must be true of bikes because I can see what the oncoming cars are doing better. But it is absolutely against the law. The safest way to ride is riding with traffic. That is Maine law. Go check out www.bikemaine.org under our safety materials, and it will tell you all about Maine bike law. It will tell you how to fit your helmet better so that it will work if you do fall, and it will tell you how to share the road with motor vehicles.
All right. And again, we will put those websites, your website as well on our Facebook page here at Maine Calling. I want to thank both of you, Nancy and Brian, for being here on Maine Calling. Nancy Grant, the Executive Director of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. Brian Dance, a board member of the Greater Portland Chapter of the New England Mountain Bike Association. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer, Cindy Hahn, answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board, and we had help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our podcast, by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. Tomorrow on the program, the debate over shipping oil from the Canadian tar sands through Maine. Join host Susan Sharon as she leads a discussion about this controversial proposal. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. Bicycle.